show that is all baseball.
They're better than they were a year ago.
This is the Baseball Hour with Tony Maz.
Brought to you by Jackson Lumber and Millwork, Bigelow Tea, Gravely Zero Turn Lawnmowers, the 99 Restaurants, Sing Sang Cocktail in the Can, Win Waste Innovations, and Woodbridge Wines.
On Boston's home for sports, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
He'll tag this one. That's well struck. Angle back to the wall. It's gone. Home run. Two-run shot for Kevin Plawecki to make it 16-7.
All right, here we go. Baseball Hour tonight. Jim Murray's alongside. Now, why the hell would we be playing a highlight of Kevin Plawecki? Kevin Plawecki. Murray, what is Kevin Plawecki's signature moment as a member of the Red Sox?
His song that he likes to hear, his walk-up music, Dancing on My Own.
Okay, so the point is, there isn't one.
No.
There isn't one. Kevin Plawecki's a backup catcher. He's been here for 3 years. True or false, Murray? He was part of the 2018 championship.
False?
False, correct. False. He wasn't here. He didn't get here until 2020, which was the pandemic year. He hit 341 that year, and then he hit 287 in 2021. Plawecki as a backup catcher was actually pretty decent. Couldn't throw. This year, he couldn't throw, couldn't hit. It was borderline, dare I say, useless, but that's not fair. That is not fair. Because he was good at handling some pitchers on the staff, and they liked him. He was released Friday night after catching Michael Wacha in a Red Sox victory. Okay, and you would say, well, so what? Like, how the hell does Kevin, why is Kevin Plawecki getting released a story? And I would tell you, if you're, a baseball fan or not, Google Kevin Plawecki and see what you come up with. And these are the stories that are out there, okay? Red Sox cutting Kevin Plawecki seems to have ruffled feathers in clubhouse. Kevin Plawecki was sent off with a beer. Chaim Blooms explains Red Sox decision to designate Kevin Plawecki. Red Sox moving on from Kevin Plawecki. Kevin Plawecki is a saga as the Red Sox pelt their way to obscurity. Red Sox players need to recognize their role in Kevin Plawecki's departure. I actually talked about someone about this today briefly, and there are two stories here. One of which is the expanded rosters in the month of September don't exist anymore. Okay? And all the time I've covered baseball, Murray, I can't ever remember a team releasing a veteran player in the month of September for a roster spot. I cannot remember it. Kevin Plawecki, say what you will about him, is a veteran player who is very popular in the Red Sox clubhouse, and the pitchers loved him. They absolutely, in fact, I would go so far as to say, I think everybody loved him, but the pitchers in particular. So he was Nathan Eovaldi's regular catcher. He ended up being Michael Wacha's basically regular catcher. So did you know, for example, Michael Wacha this year, with Kevin Plawecki behind the plate, 1.77 ERA. With Vasquez, the number was almost two runs higher, 3.75. There's a difference of 200 points in the OPS. There's a difference of 50 points in batting average. Michael Wacha was a significantly better pitcher with Kevin Plawecki behind the plate. Nathan Eovaldi, the numbers aren't quite as dramatic, but his ERA with Plawecki, 4.05. With Vasquez, 4.98. Again, almost a run difference. 100 points difference in OPS. 20 points difference in batting average. So the point is that pitchers liked him behind the plate. You're out of the race. You got 2 weeks to go. The Red Sox are going to play this week, next week, and then I think they have 3 games with Tampa at Fenway at the end of the season. Okay, that's on October 3rd, 4th, and 5th, I think, or 2nd, 3rd, and 4th, whatever it is. Those last 3 days of the season, and that's it. You're telling me the Red Sox couldn't hold on to Kevin Plawecki for a few more days just to keep him here until the end? Now, the stink that this has caused is really the other part of the story, okay? And that is the Red Sox have suffered such damage at the ownership and, you know, baseball ops levels, okay, at the management / administration level, that their people are lined up to beat the crap out of him on Kevin Plawecki. Now, you want my opinion? I think they should have just kept the guy on the roster and bitten the bullet. The guy they took Plawecki off the roster for on Friday night was Franklin Hermann. Might be pronounced German, but I think it's Hermann, who pitched on Saturday in his first major league game, faced four batters, got none of them out, and they all scored. His ERA is infinity. Okay, he is a guy they got from the Yankees when they took on Adam Ottavino and absorbed Ottavino's contract. They also got a minor leaguer in the deal. This kid was the minor leaguer. To get him into a big league game on, you know, one of the final Saturdays of the season, they had to release a veteran guy, or they chose to release a veteran guy. You can look at it however you want. Rosters are now limited to 28 players. They have two other catchers on the roster, Reese McGuire, Connor Wong. So they chose to release Plawecki. Do they deserve to get the crap kicked out of him for that?
Well, no, in a way. And I would be quick to always bash upper management with the Red Sox, but you're already out of it. And if you have someone that is coming up through your system, well, now is the time to make these roster rearrangements to get this person up here and see if you maybe have something with this kid, whether he's a pitcher or a positional player.
Okay, so here's what I would tell you. Under normal circumstances, I would say, he's a backup catcher. He's not part of your plans. Would you quit your whining? Quit your whining. It sucks. It's a business. Players get released. It happens. If Kevin Plawecki wasn't going to get released on Friday night, he was going to get released 3 weeks from Friday. Okay? It was coming. He was not part of their future. This was going to be the end of it. But for Franklin, German, or Hermann, a guy who didn't record an out on Saturday, it's a horrible look. It is a horrible look. And what I would tell the franchise is you couldn't find someone else to pitch on Saturday than a kid who clearly wasn't ready, or, and I know his numbers were half decent at AA and AAA, but for a guy who faced four batters and you were able to get away with it, that's why you took the PR hit? And that's what this thing is. It's a PR hit in their own clubhouse, and then even with the public. Again, I read you the headlines. It's really kind of, it's a bad look. It's a bad look. Now, again, I say this, I'm going to read you some comments from Nathan Eovaldi, and I would tell you, guys, let's not go too far with this. I understand a guy got released after a game and you didn't like it. But is there really a difference of him going on Friday night or again in 3 weeks? I mean, what's the difference? He's going to get his money. I actually, on some level, would be happy for him. I would look at it and go, thank God you get to go home early. Instead of having to ride out the end of this season.
Yeah, right.
Like, I would say, instead of having to play through this slog.
What a gift.
I mean, talk about a bunch of nothing games. How do you get motivated for these? Nobody's watching these games, nor should they. Yesterday, the Red Sox did under a one going against the Patriots. Not that that should be a shock, but nobody watched. Nobody cared. They shouldn't. The team played itself out of contention a long time ago. And I'm not telling you not to watch. I have to pay attention as much as I can. But the fact is, their season's been a freaking disaster. Here's what Nathan Eovaldi said. And I think he made these comments to Rob Bradford of WEEI. So I just want to be full disclosure on that. And Eovaldi says, it's extremely difficult. I felt like everything he's done for the organization and the player he is, it's unfortunate to see him go, especially on those terms with only 3 weeks to go in the system. I haven't talked to Chaim or anybody else to get the true reasoning behind it. I was disappointed when I heard the news. I understand it's a tough decision, but you want to build a championship around guys like that. Guys who are going to do what it takes to win ball games and do whatever they have to do to help the team win. And I felt he was doing that. We had Schwarber last year and Hunter Renfroe and certain guys like that. There are the guys that do the little things right on the field and off the field when you're in the clubhouse. It's hard to find a player who interacts with both pitchers and position players. Sometimes you can be a little divided. But when you have guys like Plow, Renfroe, Schwarber, all those guys are extremely good guys in the clubhouse. I think sometimes that goes a little further than productivity or whatever on the field. To me, that was a very difficult one to lose a guy like him, even where we are in the season in the last few weeks. Now, look, again, I've covered baseball a long time. I can't ever remember seeing a veteran player get released with 3 weeks to go and a team out of contention. I can't remember it. Unless, it, you know, someone could probably find one for me where there was, and I would tell you there was a some sort of issue or conflict that led to it. You don't often see managers or GMs fired at the end of the year, although it happened to Dave Dombrowski in late August in 2019. Very unusual. But I would also tell you the 40-man roster thing is completely different now. It used to be you could have 35 guys on the team and keep everyone till the end of the year and then pack up and go home. So look, do I like the looks of it? No, I don't. I think it looks like garbage. And frankly, for what the Red Sox brought up, they should have thought it out better because they should have predicted the response they got in the clubhouse. And they have enough credibility to earn back with their players and their fans than to have this hang over their heads. But at the end of the day, is anyone really going to lament Kevin Plawecki if they somehow come back and have a better season? What's this really about? I mean, this is really about sucking on the field, being pissed at management and ownership for not going out and get you the players that you need, and then for trading Christian Vasquez at the trading deadline, and further, you know, furthering that message that they didn't believe in you. That's what this is about. Nobody's really spitting on Kevin Plawecki out the door. He doesn't deserve it. He was a backup catcher, but he doesn't deserve it. He was generally well-liked by people in and around Fenway Park. There really is nothing negative about Kevin Plawecki here, at least not that I know of. Martin's in Texas. Martin, go ahead.
Yeah, Tony, I agree with a lot of what you're saying, but bottom line is he was the third-best catcher, but there are other players they could have released instead that wouldn't have caused this rift, like Abraham Almonte. He would have easily been my first player to cut well over Kevin Plawecki. Don't get me wrong. Third best catcher on the team, but you could have got rid of guys like Almonte before him, and there wouldn't have been this problem in the locker, in the clubhouse.
Okay, so Martin, this part I agree with. This is the part I agree with. That the problem was not releasing Plawecki. The problem is that the Red Sox failed to get a real understanding of how their clubhouse was going to react. And frankly, I think this is maybe the biggest mistake they've made from the very beginning. Chaim Bloom and ownership did not go out and add to the roster during the offseason. They really didn't. Although they brought in Trevor Story in spring training, and I think that was a reaction to the grumbling that was taking place in the clubhouse. The point is, before the season even started, Red Sox players felt like ownership and management didn't believe in them, that they didn't invest in them. That's what they felt before the season even started. That's how you felt as a fan. That's how most everyone in this area felt, and that's how we came up with the narrative of they're turning into the Tampa Bay Rays. And I'm not telling you the narrative was necessarily wrong. I think the Red Sox were risk-averse. They didn't want to sign any big contracts. They lowballed Bogarts. They didn't sign Devers. They traded Renfro for the future. They moved Garrett Whitlock into the rotation to hurt what was already a damaged bullpen. So now we get to this point, and Kevin Plawecki's just another log on the fire. Again, in and of itself, not a story. But you know what the mistake the Red Sox made? Again, they failed to recognize how their players were going to respond to it. And this has been, in defense of ownership and management, I'll just add this. This has been a very sensitive clubhouse for a couple of years, starting really at the All-Star break a year ago. At the trading deadline a year ago. They were upset at that deadline. They were upset again at this deadline. They played poorly right around the deadline both of those years. Very easily distracted team. But I would tell the players as well as ownership and management, if you want to win a championship, guess what? You all have to get a little more committed. Every single one of you. We'll be back with your calls in a minute.
The Baseball Hour with Tony Maz continues after these on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Now more baseball and more Mavs.
Okay.
This is the Baseball Hour with Tony Mavs on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
All around, the last few weeks have been impressive. You know, driving the ball, taking what they give him, being more selective in certain counts. So, you know, obviously, we love the fact that he plays every day, but the way he goes about it and just, I always said he's the most consistent person in this organization. So it's fun to watch and be ready for Tuesday.
We played a bunch of sound for you last week of Alex Cora talking about Xander Bogaerts, how other players should emulate him, how he's really the standard in that clubhouse. That comment was from over the weekend. Cora said again, he's the most consistent person in this organization. Think of that. Think of that comment. So, and I, again, this to me is all part of Cora's plea to keep Bogaerts in Boston. And I think it's unusual for a player, for a manager rather, to endorse a player the way Cora has endorsed Bogaerts. With a, you know, a pending contract issue. And when I say contract issue, you know what I mean? Bogaerts can opt out after the season. And Cora now, more than one occasion, has come out and basically said, we got to keep this guy. Think of that comment. The most consistent person in the organization. The most consistent. And you're going to let him walk out the door? For who? At shortstop. After finishing last for the fifth time in 11 years. That's the guy they're going to let go, walk out the door, the most consistent guy in the organization. That's Alex Cora, again, offering his 2 cents, putting the Red Sox on alert. Don't mess with this guy. Get it done. Get it done. Now, there are some people over there that think that, you know, I guess Sam Kennedy said recently there's already been some discussion between the organization and Bogaerts. They're trying to find common ground, what have you. I don't know how much of that is lip service, how much of that is legit. But some people do theorize or believe that they've already started talking earnestly and could be moving closer to an agreement, in which case I would say Cora's just playing into it. But if that is not what's happening and Cora's saying what he's saying publicly, oh, he knows damn well what he's doing, which is he's taking the player's side in it. And that should tell you something. That should tell you something about how Cora feels, too, about the way things have gone down this year. So the only possible good that can come out of this season is that the Red Sox recognize the error of their ways and actually come back stronger next year for it, all the way across. We'll take your calls. Brian's in a car. Go ahead, Brian. What do you got?
Hey, Tony. So I'm not going to completely, disagree with your statement. I mean, I believe this front office is totally not in touch with their players and treat the team more like a fantasy team. And plug and play their players and numbers. But at the same time, if you want to, make sure that your buddies keep their jobs, you probably should win some baseball games.
So, Brian, look, that is that's sort of a part that gets overlooked in this. And this is what John Tomasi wrote on NBC Sports Boston. So I don't want to steal his thought. But you want to save your jobs? Win. Win. And when there are trades made, whether you like them or not, keep playing. And I'll go back to last year at the trading deadline and All-Star break more than I will this year, because this year they were starting to spiral and we had real questions about whether you should sell. Last year was more of a question about how much you should invest. See, but that gets in a tricky territory if you are an organization, because you can say, well, we're going to make moves to help, but they're really kind of half-assed moves. Because the message you send to the roster is, we weren't going to add no matter what. And if they start believing that on a regular basis, like, yeah, you guys say you want to win, but you don't really want to win because you don't want to extend yourself for it. You don't want to sign the guy to the big contract. You don't want to make the trade and give something up. And you don't want to make a run at winning. But you expect us to come out here and play to win every day. I mean, if you're an organization, that's a hard sell. Ownership and management, meaning, you know, going from Henry and Werner down to Bloom and his baseball operations staff, they've lost the belief of their baseball operation people. And when I say that, I mean their uniform personnel. They've lost their faith. They got to somehow try to win that back. Kevin's in the car. Hi, Kevin. Kevin, what do you got?
Ken?
Oh, Ken, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Yeah, go ahead, Ken.
So, Maz, obviously you were a beat guy for years. I hear this, the Plawecki thing. Big Jim's right. He was going to go. He was going to be DFA'd. What is Bloom doing? He makes Cora stand up in front of the beat guys and say, yeah, we sat at a locker. We had a beer. It's life. This is what happens. He just took a leak, meaning Chaim Bloom, in all the players' ears saying, essentially, I'm going to show you who runs this clubhouse. And I think he's lost them all.
Yeah, Ken, I told you, I think they got to win back the belief in that room. I think that is the number one task for ownership and management. And again, how can you blame the players on that one? And when I say, look, at the end of the day, they're culpable too. A lot of them underperformed this year, starting with J.D. Martinez. He grossly underperformed. Evaldi underperformed. A lot of guys underperformed. So we'll start there. At the same time, do you think ownership and management, do you think they believed in him? Were the players right to send some trepidation there?
Yeah. I mean, the players were right, I'm saying.
I mean, it felt that way.
Yeah.
You can talk about all the moves you want. What moves did they do? What moves did they make to help the bullpen, really?
No, nothing.
Zero. And when the trading deadline came, this notion of, well, we're going to trade off some parts, but we're going to add others, the whole thing was really geared toward the future. So you can say, well, they added Eric Hosmer. How many games did he play? That didn't last long. So, you know, they lost Hosmer for the most part. Tommy Pham helped them a little bit. They could have had him back in the spring. Those are holes that they had all year long when they dug themselves a deficit. So the fact is the Red Sox put more of an emphasis and onus on the future than they did on the coming season. And look, you want to tell me that they want to prioritize the long term because they got to rebuild the operation, the farm system still? Fine. They went too far. They took it too far. It really felt like they were just saying to the season, well, all we're going to do this year is win 83 games, 85 games. We'll see if we can sneak into that last playoff spot, and then we'll see where we are a year from now. And here's the scary thing. Let's say that 2021 had happened all over again, and they had hit on Jackie Bradley and, you know, Waka panned out and Evaldi stayed healthy. They got to the playoffs and lost. You know what they would have done? They'd have let Bogarts go. They might still let him go. They might have just said to Rafael Devers, see you later. So now they might be forced to act more aggressively there. Again, if there's good to come out of it, that's what it is. Eddie's in Revere. Hi, Eddie.
Hey, Tony. I'm glad you touched on this subject because I heard the news after the game that Plawecki had been released DFA. I'm thinking, really? After the season that the, you know, the real fans have endured and the underachieving and the just the horrible management moves, they have to stick us with this on the way out of the season. I just don't get it. And it all, to me, it all funnels back to Chaim Bloom. And I don't know. Maybe the guy would be a brilliant accountant or mathematician. But I don't think he has a human side that shows that these are people. These players are real human people. Maybe some more than others as far as, you know, how they're affected when they play. I just don't – I don't see what his plan is. Is he thinking, well, 3 years from now, we're going to be great. So who cares about this season? The people who buy tickets will buy tickets in 3 years as well.
Yeah, so
– I just don't get it.
Eddie, let me ask you this question. Do you think he cared about the human side last year?
No.
Okay, but they won. So this whole thing about caring about the human side, I love this argument too. What are you, delusional? Are you delusional? Do you think they really care about the people? Because they don't. They say they do, but every company does. Like, I don't even hold that one against them. At the end of the day, nobody cares about anybody other than your family. So let's not delude ourselves on that one. Like, you know, Chaim Bloom doesn't care about people. First of all, I'll tell you this, that generally speaking, I think he does. I don't think he's the devil. But I think they were tone deaf with regard to how some of these moves were going to affect their players. And I think what they've learned over there is that they've lost the trust and faith of their uniform personnel. They have lost it. So that is gone. At the end of the day, really ask yourself rationally, think rationally. How is it that it was going to be any better if Kevin Plawecki got released in 3 weeks? Or that they didn't renew him and they just let him go? What's the difference? So it's not in and of itself that they made this decision, which I admit is unusual. Okay? It's not in and of itself that that happened. The real issue is it's piled on all this other stuff where they now look at the players and the coaching staff and the manager, anybody in a uniform, now looks at the front office and ownership and says, you got to be kidding me. You can't even let us go out with dignity? That's how they're looking at it. Okay, so I think what has happened, they've completely lost touch with how their clubhouse feels about them and what kind of impact it was going to have. That is the stunning part of this whole story. They completely lost touch. Murray's got your headlines. I have a question for you all about Aaron Judge. So none of us are delusional here at 98.5. Murray knows that as well as anybody. Felger said last week, Dan Shaughnessy of the Globe wrote something in a column recently about how Aaron Judge's home run pursuit, his pursuit of Roger Maris's record, was something like, the most honest, the real home run champion or something like that. I mean, who knows if Judge is clean or he isn't? How the hell do we know that? We don't know that. I mean, I'm not telling you he's cheating, but who knows? I mean, we've all walked that walk. But I'll tell you why this year's Judge performance should matter more than some of the others. Okay, I'll explain that when we come back. Murray's get your head.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
This is the Baseball Hour with Tony Maz on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
High fly ball, right field. There it goes. See ya. Number 58. He's three away from Roger Maris. And the pitch. Deep to left. There it goes. He's one away from Ruth. Home run number 59 for Aaron Judge. And it's 10-4 Yankees. Unbelievable. Now, only Roger Maris and Babe Ruth have ever hit more home runs in a season than Aaron Judge in the American League.
Well, there you go. Two more home runs for Judge. 59 now. Shaughnessy says the real home run king, real home run champion. Felger snorts at people who think that Judge isn't using steroids. I don't know. Maybe he is. I rule out nothing when it comes to stuff like that. But let me tell you why I look at it and said, this guy's having a pretty good year. First of all, Murray, do you agree?
That what? He's having a good, pretty good year?
Yeah, I don't mean, but you know what I mean. Like, I'll tell you why I give a little more credence to the performance. And I don't mean credence based on steroids. Okay? But first of all, is he your MVP?
Oh, without question.
Okay.
Yeah. And I get the case for Otani, but I mean, if you look at all the important, you know, batting statistics from obviously home runs, RBI, runs, war, on base percentage, it's just you look at the line first. He's first in every important category.
Okay. And the line of he is the real home run king or whatever it was.
Oh, please. No, stop. It's 73. Like, whether you like it or not, 73 is the number.
Okay.
And look at him. He's built like a young Paul Bunyan. You think that's just genetics? Give me a break.
Okay. And I'm just going to say, so you allow for the reality that there could be
some. Yes.
Okay. As do I. Yeah. Here's the part that should interest you or impress you. Who's second? Who's second in the majors in home runs? If I said that, do you even know?
You know, I don't.
Okay, but this is my point.
Yeah.
Okay, Kyle Schwarber, 39. Aaron Judge is 20 home runs ahead of the next guy on the list. He is blowing away the field. So let's just say, well, yeah, man, that's proof he's using steroids. So he's the only guy? No one else is out there is using him? He's the only one. So it's only helping him and nobody else?
Oh, please.
Well, that's going to be ridiculous. Yordan Alvarez of the Astros has 37. Okay, he's third. Schwarber is second. He's 20 behind. 20. Judge could have shut it down weeks ago, and he would have won the home run title. I don't know where Schwarber's going to end up, but Judge is going to – it's not even freaking close. There has not been another guy like him in the big leagues this year. And there is a chance he could win the Triple Crown if you want to go that route. So, look again, the cheating thing, I let go of that a long time ago. Holy crap, what are we doing? Like, you vote, whatever the numbers were, they were. They let the game get stupid and crazy. That's not our fault. So, and I will give Felger a lot of credit for this. He sort of, he said, just vote for the best players. He's right. Vote for the best players. You know where Aaron Judge is now in the batting race? Third.
First. Oh, third?
Arise is 317. Bogaerts is 316. Judge is 316. And he leads in home run and RBI. He's right there. And he's 20 homers ahead of anyone else. Let's not be ridiculous. Jim is in a car on High and Bloom. Go ahead, Jim.
Hey, Maz, how you doing tonight?
Good.
Hey, so two things. One, I don't understand why the Boston Red Sox, one of the premier jobs for a general manager, hire a guy who was never a general manager. Like, he was an assistant to the assistant. And I think you're seeing what's happened. Yeah, he can run a farm system, but you're seeing what's happened at the major league level that is, been ludicrous. Like, one of the worst outfields I've ever seen. You've
okay,
talked
Jim,
about on the first baseman.
Jim, yeah. Let me stop you just for a second. I'll put you on hold real quick. Did you feel the same way when they hired Theo Epstein?
I didn't know. So they got lucky there. So I agree with you. You're absolutely correct on that. So it goes against what I'm saying. But in this case, I don't know why you take the chance. I mean, the Dodgers wanted the general manager, so they took the Tampa Bay general manager. You know what I mean? Like, couldn't the Red Sox pay money extra above market value to, say, take a really hot general manager on another team? I just don't understand it. I feel like they're getting a lot of what they deserve. And just one last point.
I'm going to let you go just because I have other people on the line, so don't take it personally. Your question's legit. And I just threw the Theo question in there because when I said, did you feel the same way about Theo? I did. I hated the Theo signing at the time, or the elevation of Theo. They brought him over. He was an assistant with, I'm not even sure he was an assistant with Kevin Towers. He might have been. But like, Theo was 28. I mean, come on. Yeah, hire one of our interns to freaking run baseball ops. I hated it at the time. I was wrong. I would also say Theo's the outlier. Everything about Theo's career has made him an outlier. So now, could Chaim Bloom be an outlier? Sure. Do I like what I've seen? No. I think he's put too much emphasis on the short term. I'm sorry, the long term. The difference for Theo was they hadn't won in 86 years. And so there was balls to the wall all the time. Balls to the wall. They had to win. They had to win now. Bobby's in Worcester. Go ahead, Bobby.
Hey, guys. I just wanted to ask your opinion on where do we draw the line between Chaim Bloom's philosophy long-term and logic? Like, when does it become logic we keep Xander Bogaerts?
Okay, so are you against keeping Bogaerts?
No, I want to keep him.
Oh, I see.
An opportunity to get a guy like Judge. But at the end of the day, where do we draw the line in the sand between logic, common sense, and, we have a five-year plan?
Well, good question, Bobby. So I'll tell you what, where do we draw the line in the sand? How about this winter? That'd be a good place to do it. Because, again, he's going to be a free agent in, a month and a half. The beginning of November will basically be a free agent when the World Series is over. So this would be a good time to draw that line. Let's see how it goes. Something tells me they're going to throw a pile of money at Bogaerts and a pile of money at Devers. I don't think they have a choice anymore. After all this, all the bad PR of losing Mookie Betts, then losing money during the pandemic. They had a good year in 2021. But honestly, that is all unraveled. It has all gone right back to where it was in the span of just months. After all that, they're going to let Bogaerts and Devers go? I mean, if they do, they're going to bring in someone else who is gigantic. I saw the Vegas odds that said it's 10% that Judge comes to the Red Sox. I'm not holding my breath on Judge. But they're spending money on some big contracts this offseason, whether they like it or not. I don't see how they can't do it. Jim in the car. Go ahead, Jim.
Would you say 10% odds of getting the...
According to Vegas, yes, that, Jim. Yeah, that's right. That's right,
Tony, they're off by 10%. There's 0% chance. Chaim Bloom was brought in here, right? So Chaim Bloom was brought in here to replace Dave Dombrowski. Dave Dombrowski was all about this year, not about next year, 3 years, not about the farm system. Chaim Bloom was brought in here to do what he's doing. Now, I think he's been an abysmal failure, but the talk about, you know, I think he brought in Story to replace Bogaerts.
Okay.
And the only thing that...
Yeah, Jim, you're not alone on that. I think that, look, I think that it was a fallback plan. And I'll tell you, and when I say fallback, if they had won this year, I think that's exactly what they would have done. And when I say won, I don't mean the World Series. If they had made the playoffs, got bounced in the LCS just like they did a year ago, or took someone good to the Game 5 of the Division Series, or however the format is now, that's changed, right? But I think the Division Series is still five games. But if they had done that, Story would be your shortstop. I don't see how they can pull that off now. How do they sell that? So again, even if Bogaerts goes, even if Dombrowski signs him to play in Philly, which could happen, even if that happens, they've got to spend the money somewhere else. They can't let this thing continue to pile up. They got to throw a mountain of money at somebody. And I have to believe that Bogaerts and Devers are at the top of their list. Given the hits they have taken in the last couple of years, if they don't do that, unless they replace them with like Trey Turner and Aaron Judge, okay, then maybe we can have a different discussion. But they've got to improve the team. Adam's in a car. Hi, Adam.
Hey, Matt. Thanks for taking my call. You kind of answered my question there. You know, I kind of remember how Chaim Bloom was being celebrated with the team after a playoff win, you know, getting big hugs with everybody, and it looked like he was part of, you know, a player on the team. And then to contrast that, the PR debacle that was like the Christian Vasquez trade, I mean, I don't think if you can paint two different pictures there. My question was, though, if he's trying to turn it back around, you're thinking that the bigger pieces of re-signing Bogaerts and Devers as opposed to like bringing in new players to show that they're in it to win it, is that, you think Bogaerts and Devers are more, hey, we're in it for you guys, as opposed to like bringing in you guys?
Adam, I think those are the most likely. So that's the way I should say it. I think they're the most likely. And I think that Devers put stock into Bogaerts returning. It doesn't mean that Devers is going to go play with Bogaerts somewhere else. Because if they don't sign Bogaerts and they do nothing, let's just say they have another offseason like last and Bogaerts walks, they may be forced to trade Rafi Devers. Unless they throw a mountain of money at him that he can't say no to. I wouldn't rule that out either. They sign Devers and let Bogaerts go. I mean, everything's on the table here. So I don't think you should dismiss any of it. But I just think that when you look at them finishing last, they're going to finish last for the fifth time in 11 years. Five last place finishes in 11 years. That is more last place finishes than any team in baseball except Detroit, who will also have five unless they overtake Kansas City here in the last couple of weeks. So think of that. The Red Sox could have more last place finishes in the last 11 years than any franchise in the sport with the resources they have. And they will have done it with three different general managers, which is no small trick. And it's probably smart part of the problem, frankly. So again, what I'm hoping is that this debacle of a season has inspired them all to sort of reassess and reevaluate and start communicating. Because the chasm that exists between the uniform baseball people and the non-uniform decision makers from ownership to Bloom is gigantic. It's huge, and they need to figure that out. We'll wrap it up with your calls next. I see a few of you are still there, so don't go anywhere.
Now more baseball and more Mavs.
Okay!
This is the Baseball Hour with Tony Mavs on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Somebody said you got a new friend.
All right, well, Jim, I had a couple of calls here before we go, so I ask you just quickly be succinct. How's that? And Pete Millville's up first with a question that I think is worth asking. Go ahead, Pete.
Hey, Matt, I want to know why Alex Cora gets a free pass on the dysfunction of the Sox right now. And case in point here is what just happened with Plawecki. And Bloom releasing him and Alex Cora not knocking his door down, saying, hey, he's a great clubhouse guy, he shouldn't be released. And then Bloom still releasing him. I think the dysfunction is a relationship between Cora and Bloom.
Yep, Pete, you're not wrong. You're not wrong. In fact, I think you hit the nail on the head. Why isn't Cora taking as much blame? I think because Cora's in alignment with his clubhouse. Now, I would say that if you're asking me which side I'm on the uniform side. Because I felt like the ownership and upper management of this team made too many decisions early on that were geared more for the long term than the short. Most of my gripe is with Bloom. But I will say that ownership hired Bloom to do what he's doing. So let's not run Bloom up the flagpole here when the fact is that he's representing ownership as well. To me, you sort of lump him uniform, non-uniform. That's sort of how I look at it. But you're not wrong. And I would say if the Red Sox are to go anywhere, they got to figure it out. Cora's got to listen to Bloom, and Bloom's got to listen to Cora. It's got to go both ways. Quickly, Anthony and Waltham, go ahead.
Do you think the Red Sox will course correct and either sign Verlander, DeGrom, or Rodon to a $100-plus million contract? Will they?
I don't know. That's a good question. I would say no on Verlander and DeGrom because they're older. Rodon's a different story. I mean, $100 million for a pitcher in this day and age, it's really not that much. David Price is going to retire apparently at the end of the year. Maybe we'll do this later in the week. Did you see this story?
Yeah.
They gave him $217 8 years ago. $100 million. I'd give someone $100 million yesterday. Derek quickly in Marlboro on Aaron Judge. Go ahead, Derek.
Hey, Tony, thank you. Yeah, I was wondering, will the Red Sox pitch to Judge if he's sitting on the precipice of breaking the record, number one? And number two, didn't Roger Maris break the record playing against the Red Sox?
Yes, he did. Yeah, I think it was Tracy Stallard who gave up his home run, if I remember right, the 61st homer. Will they pitch to him? Like, let's just say hypothetically next weekend in New York. I hope so. Don't wuss out. Get him out. Historically, they'd been pretty good on Judge till this year. You got to pitch around him because he's going to break some sort of record? That's a loser thing to do. Would you pitch to him, Murray?
Yeah.
I would hope so. Don't pitch to him.
That is, it's a loser thing to do.
Oh, it's a total loser thing to do.
If he gets you, he gets you. I don't know. If you're a baseball player, you're a fan of the sport. Don't you also want to see him achieve it, too?
How about strike his ass out and let him do it against someone else?
All right.
All right, what do we got? Adam Jones? And McBone, right? Doing the McBone dance tonight? Huh? I like it. Dancing with McBone. Murray's got your headlines. We'll catch you tomorrow. Have a good night.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.